Okay, and I would just like to welcome all of you. This is our second already conference call for PM101, and I'll pop that in the chat. I don't know, Anne, you're probably not in the chat on your computer. The chat you access not through the conference call, but through our Moodle space. And I know, Spider, don't worry, you're in there. Peter, if you want to jump in too, you can. You just go into the learning space. Go into the learning event and click on activity number 5 under PM101, and then you'll see enter chat now at the bottom underneath the time. So no obligation. Yeah, I think you can chat too in the computer chat, Anne. It's just the people, Spider is on his phone only, so he won't see your chat on your phone. He'd only see it if you went onto your computer.
Oh.
And logged in there. So there's two different chats here. So, and the chat you just used is really good if you need to let me know that you can't hear me or something like that, because it pops right up full in front on my screen. So thank you. All right. So let's get rolling. I hope everybody had good conferences last week. Spider, did you go to the NWTRPA conference?
Yes, in Fort Smith.
How was that?
It was very interesting. I'd only heard of Richard Van Camp, but he was there. I did a couple of sessions, particularly around storytelling. He's quite a storyteller, that guy. And we talked about some of the books that he'd written, and then as draw prizes, he gave out a bunch of the books that he's given. Yeah. And then there was an interesting woman, Audrey Giles, from the University of Ottawa, I believe, talking on about cold water survival. She comes to the north quite often, and works with rec departments and coordinators to make waterfronts and boating and water activity safer. Challenges she has around people wearing life jackets and stuff like that.
That's great. Yeah.
Yes,
so I think
awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead, Anne. Let's just have a little conversation, because okay. Peter was nodding his head at the first person, Peter Van Camp, that Spider mentioned. So, Anne, you talk about Audrey and what and stuff. We'll just have a little conversation, because it's great to be able to network and share some of these things. So go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, Audrey's awesome. I've worked with her on the Drowning Prevention Coalition for Canada, and she's amazing. She's very down-to-earth and really gets rural communities. So I think she's wonderful.
And here's another coincidence. So Audrey is really, really good friends with Aggie, who was at our conference.
I remember Richard Van Camp was in the Yukon in Whitehorse, because they had like you'd write like a short story, and then they have like a little like conference when you were in high school. I can't remember, a few years ago, but I remember meeting him. I'm still friends with him on Facebook, even though he's kind of like a celebrity.
Is he from NWT?
Originally from Fort Smith. He's originally from Fort Smith, so he prefaced his talks by, I used to go to school here, and I lived down, a block and a half that way, and he'd point wherever he was. Yeah, isn't he?
That's great. So it sounds like those were two highlights for you, then, that at the conference. How many people were there, Spider?
About 55.
That's a good number for post-COVID.
Right, and there was very limited accommodation, but they managed to get everybody accommodated, which was good. They had found somebody to cater it locally, I think, so the food was good. They did a lot of things very well.
That's great. And let's just make this part of our introduction. So, Peter, we had the UConn rec gathering, and this was your first. What was a highlight for you, something that Spider might be interested in hearing about, for example?
Everyone has really great ideas. I think, and we identified a lot of really big issues around recreation, but it was just sort of like going from not knowing the solution, but having like ideas for the solution, and then kind of implementing them, which is really trickier. I really like why WBCF, or wait, WCDF, or what was the acronym again? I always mix it up.
Community Building Youth Futures, CBYF.
Community Building, CBYF, yes. I really like their idea because they were like trying to unify all these recreation departments that all basically are working towards the same goal, but all work independently. And their whole idea was to just bring them all together so that we could be more efficient. And it was like more work up front, but ultimately it would make things way more streamlined and efficient. So I don't know if you had any ideas like that in your own community. I'm sure there probably is some redundant organizations or organizations that are all doing the same thing, but they're all doing it in their own way or independently. So I thought that was really cool, tackling like a really big issue like that.
Yeah, and there's a similar project in NWT in Yellowknife, right? One of those, the Tamarack Institute that funded it. Do you know, I can't remember what it's called. Do you remember Spider?
No. First I've heard of the Community Building Youth Futures Initiative, too. Mind you, I'm not formally in recreation, so more on the sports side, but presume somebody in NWT Rec and Parks knows.
Yeah, I think it's closer to one of the non-profit.
Yeah.
They're part of the Boys and Girls Club, I think.
Is it? Okay. What was interesting to me was that about the same time, there'd been, very sadly, a series of suicides in Tuktoyaktuk. And so their community was reeling, and I was looking to redouble Sport North's efforts to get safe talk training done, sort of suicide conversations around to support coaches and team personnel to, if they, to help them be more suicide aware and to ask some questions of those who might be thinking about suicide and then very quickly trying to get them some support. And to be here with in parts might also be interested in sort of partnering. When I first looked at it, the Ministry of Health was sort of umming and ahhing because they saw it as an additional budget expense to keep facilitators to orchestrate safe talk, and the next level up is called assist. To get them trained and to keep them trained, it would be another budget item, so it sort of fell away. But had we kept up with it and especially gotten more folks suicide aware in Tuck, maybe, would we be in the fallout of this tragedy that the folks in Tuck are experiencing now? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a tough thing. Like, I think there's a lot of opportunities to do prevention through recreation and sport, but people don't always see us that way, so. Thanks, Spider. And I'm just going to ask you, was there one highlight from the conference last week that you wanted to share that you, I know you and Peter have probably talked about it, but something that might be interesting to Spider to hear about what we did in the UConn?
We actually haven't talked about it yet. Today,
yeah, and you're muted, so you might have to just, there we go, now you're unmuted.
Yeah, I'm curious to know, Spider, from the NWT conference, was your numbers just participants, or does that include facilitators?
Probably included facilitators. I counted the number of people in the room at the opening keynote.
Yeah, that's because we had, I think we were somewhere around 40. I'm not sure, to be honest, but...
High 30s, maybe 40.
So I mean, we're a similar size, right? So I'm always curious to know if we're reaching as many people as we could as participants. But for me, I think highlight was the networking part. Because there was a free time, two of the three nights for people to find dinner on their own, I found that was the most beneficial, was that running into each other in different places, and often there were pretty limited places to go in the evening, so you were bound to run into to and sit and eat together with people to drink with during the event. So that was really beneficial. Like, I really enjoyed that informal networking component and feel it was a nice way of listening to people and how they're doing, right? Just on a personal level. So that, for me, was really great.
You bet. Anyway, awesome. I think it was the first in-person one since COVID, eh?
Yeah, and typically in NWT, I think when you guys hold them, you alternate between a community and Yellowknife. And when they're in Yellowknife, you get like close to, it's pre-COVID, closer to 200 people. And it's usually about a quarter of that when it's in the communities, I think. So, and then ARPAN has their sport and recreation conference coming up in Iqaluit this weekend. So starting, I think, on Friday. And they get quite a few people, but it always depends on the weather. So I know somebody in the core learning events from Kugluktuk is going all the way to Iqaluit. So this is probably a 2 to 3 day travel each way just for her. So fingers crossed. But let's move on with our call, because I do have some questions that are kind of pertinent to our topics this week that I wanted us to chat about. So as I mentioned, welcome to our second and our last call for PM 101. Promote recreation. I'd like to acknowledge that I'm hosting this call, and this week I'm on the traditional territory of the Kwamundun First Nation and Ton Kwachin Council. So on our call 2 weeks ago, we chatted about the first three steps of a promotional activity, and those first three steps answered the why, the what, and the who. We also talked quite a bit about the need to motivate versus the need to inform, and that's something that you've pulled out in your posts from that week. So I really encourage you to look at each other's posts and see how those different campaigns that you took a look at pull out informational messages as well as motivational messages. Hopefully you had a bit of time to watch that YouTube video with Simon Sinek's TED Talk. I really like how he explained so well how the why is really compelling as compared to the what. I think really in recreation, what we all recognize, and sport too, is we recognize that the why is what, it's the hook. You know, it's what gets people. It's not the what. So it really, the why is quite important. So we've already done our introduction, so thank you for that. And there's quite a lot of content for this week, particularly in activity number 4. So hopefully you've had a chance to have a look at that as well, and if not, take some time today or tomorrow. As we work through our call, I'm going to ask you to share also your ideas about good practices for social media in our small remote communities. Last year with the group that I had, we created a guide, like a good practices guide for social media that people found was really helpful. So what I thought I'd do, because we have a small number, is I will take your ideas and I'll add them to the guide, and then I'll share it back with you so that you've got something that you can refer back to if you want to. If we have time to, which we should with only 3 of us, I'd also like to touch on privacy as it relates to promotion, because I think that's a really important thing for us, especially working with children and youth in sport and recreation. So I have one more quick question. This was my introductory question, but I think we know who you are, where you are, and what territory you're from. So I'm just going to ask you this question. I'll pop it in the chat, which I know in both chats, so Anne can see it as well. And my question is for you, if you could use one tool only for promotion in your community or in your territory, what would it be and why? So I'll give you a chance to think about that. Anne, I'm going to pop it in the chat that you're in too, so that you can have a look at that as well. So on my screen, I see Peter, Spider, and Anne. So let's just go in that order for this question. So Peter, I'm putting you on the spot here. If you're in that chat, Spider's already popped his answer in there. But why don't you go first? Like, what would be the number one tool for promotion? And let's say in the Yukon, because you're working with the whole territory.
I feel like
you want to pass and come back to you at the end?
Yeah, thank you, sir. I feel like creating a sense of community would probably be the biggest one because we're really tight knit. I just remember that is one of the tools, right, that we listed. It is, or maybe that's something a little different. I know.
Okay, well, think about it. I'll come back.
For some reason,
I'll come back around
like,
to you.
Promote. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Give me a second.
Yeah. Just let's hear what everyone else has to say because I have a sense that I kind of think I know what you're getting at, but I'm not gonna. I don't want to put the answer in your mouth just yet. So let's go to Spider. Spider, okay. You popped in the chat, the one on the computer from Moodle, Facebook. And Anne's pop Facebook too. So why would that be the number one tool? Like if you could only use one tool, Spider, why would you use Facebook?
As I understand it, a lot of the communities have their own Facebook page. But if I need to get the word out, I can go to our branding person here at Sport North Whitney and say, okay, I wanted to get out on, like, sure, I can use Instagram Twitter as well, but, If I know that, or she knows, if she can confirm that a community has its own Facebook page, then that makes sense. Also, there's the option to pay a little bit of money and to boost the message. This is all somewhat still new to me, recognizing that I'm, I shouldn't be, but I am brand new to social media. I actually went as far last week to approach social media school grad who now works for Western Canada Lottery Corporation to see if indeed they would run two courses, one Social Media 101, getting started, and then the next one would be Social Media 201 Tips and Tricks. And she said, well, you know, she couldn't do that privately, but as part of her work, because all the TSOs, charitable sport organizations were getting funding, that she could do that as part of her work. And use, for example, how a TSO could acknowledge the Western Canada Lottery Program because that's an obligation as per our contract with them to get funding. And so this is all very timely for me. And but that's what I would do is I would do Facebook, and then I suppose as I learn more about social media, targeting youth or whomever, I look at some of the other platforms as well.
Great. Thanks, Spider. And you popped in the chat. You said Facebook, but I find it a challenge. So if you could only use one promotional tool, you would choose to use Facebook. Why would you choose to use Facebook? I'm not a big fan of why questions, but I'm just going to say why or what's the reason.
Because that's what John told us at our social media workshop last week in Boston.
That's
true. He said everyone is on Facebook, but 97%, I think, was the number compared to Instagram and TikTok and all of those other communication tools. They're much lower, like they're closer to 37%. So it's got a huge reach. It sounds like it's got a whole huge reach across the board, right, of all ages. So I guess that would be why. I personally hate it. I find it really challenging to use. So I download it. But that's why we have young people in our office, right, Peter? You can help with that.
The stat that John Cronin said was that 69% of UConners use social media and 90% of them use Facebook.
Yeah, so that's high,
so,
right?
Yeah, that's really high.
Yeah, but if I might chime in, I hate Facebook because it tells me what I should be thinking. So I actually don't follow anybody or anything. If I want to look for something, I go intentionally to look for it on Facebook only because I know I can find it faster. But anyway, so yeah, there's that whole piece. So let's just come back to what Peter just said. So Peter, you mentioned a sense of community. And I have my own answer written down to this question.
Maybe it's not what you were looking for, but I kind of was thinking about it. I think word of mouth is kind of like what I was thinking with that. Like creating a sense of community around something. Like, okay, for example, I think of like UConn Built. I think UConn Built is such a genius company because UConn Built is such a great place. People take pride in being from UConn. And I see them just dipping their hands in every single department across the Yukon, and even us, we use Yukon-built stuff. I think it's genius. You're creating a sense of community around your brand. But then I also think of, like, word of mouth. I have an example, like, my friend, he had a very, very terrible experience at Polarity Brewing, and he basically, like, boycotted Polarity, and he got it so that all of us, all of his friends, like, it was, like, 12 or 15 of us, that just won't go there anymore. Just because of this one experience he had one time with one server. And I've gone there a couple times, but I always feel so guilty about it because I'm like, oh, I feel bad for my friend Alex. He just doesn't go there anymore. He had such a terrible, terrible time there, and he just voiced that, and it caused such a huge, like, it just, word of mouth is really powerful in a small community because everyone knows each other. And so you can use it to your advantage, but it can also be a bad thing if someone has a bad experience.
You are thinking exactly what I had written down. So I'm going to read, like, this is my notes for the for the call. And I'd written down that although it's a difficult question for me to answer in a city like Whitehorse or Yellowknife, I've lived in Watson Lake, and I personally still think that the best tool is word of mouth. So I totally agree with you, Peter. You know, maybe not so much so during the pandemic, but if people are excited or interested in something, like I tell everybody about Bean North. It is my favorite coffee place. We used to talk all the time about the chocolate claim. I so miss the chocolate claim. So, you know, and everybody knew those places, and I never followed them on social media, and their social media is kind of blah anyways. But, you know, when you're excited or interested in something, you tell people. But likewise, what you just said about Polarity Brewing, if you're not excited about it, you also tell people. So, you know, I think it's really, that sort of speaks to that slide. I think you're looking at one of those slides, Peter, where we talk about technology as a tool, but we also have those tried and tested tools like word of mouth. So I think it's important to recognize, you know, that there's multiple ways. So thanks, everybody. That's a really interesting conversation and something for you to think about. So we're going to scroll through a few of the slides if you have them there. If you don't worry, because I have just a little bit of content to share with you. I'm starting with slide 20, which says that after we've done the, you know, the why and the what questions that we did last week, we start looking at the how, the where, and the when. And that's really important, like, to help us put our ideas into action. So when we're figuring out the purpose and the why for our promotions, that's sort of we're conceptualizing it or thinking how it might work. And now we've got to, like, okay, what are the actions that we're going to do to make this happen? So there's quite a bit to consider this week. It took me quite a lot to sort of try and put it into a small amount of content. So if you take a look at slide 21, it's suggesting that what you want to begin with is how you could prepare or package your promotional materials. So this involves things like figuring out your key messages, having some branding or knowing what your branding is, or developing your branding if you don't have it, and making decisions on which tools to use. Slides 22 and 23 give you a bit more information on how you should shape your key messages. And as we talked about last week, we really want to make sure that your messages give information, like what we want you to do, where it's going to take place, how you can register, what time it is, what you need to bring with you. But we also need to motivate people to act. So we talked about that a lot last week. So things like a family that plays together, stays together, recreation brings a community together. I've got a slide there that says What Moves You, and it's actually an Indigenous campaign, Journeys to Wellness. It's from the Move More Now org. And I looked at their campaign. I just love it. Like, it just speaks to family, physical activity, and core values. So if you haven't had a look at it, it's definitely worth taking a look at. So we're going to take a couple of minutes. I haven't quite got to. Okay, so branding is described on slides 24 and 25 is like your personality. So the way you come across. So the fact that I've put pajamas on the bottom but none on the top, that's, you know, if you guys could see me, that would be kind of like my branding about how I work. I like to be relaxed but a little bit prepared. Branding, if your promotional materials and efforts communicate a personality, like Peter just mentioned with Yukon Built, people are more likely to notice what you're doing, follow what you're doing, and participate in whatever it is that you're doing. So I just want to know quickly, and I do probably know the answers for some of you, but I would like to ask you, and we're going to start with Spider this time in our circle, does your group or organization have its own distinct brand that you portray in all of your promotional activities? And so you could answer yes, no, kind of, I don't know, or explain a little further. So here's the question coming in the chat. So we'll go Spider, and then Anne, and then Peter. So Spider,
I think visually we do have our own brand. We do use one of two logos, one Sport Notes logo, which is sort of a circle with an inverted icon or stylistic image of an individual. And the other Team NT, with the letters NT, and then the background stylized our Northern Lights. We do have a tagline, Moving Sport Forward, which I think I authored 6 or 7 years ago now, but I think that that's not good enough. I think that we need to have a better tagline, like I think generally when I was doing the elevator speech, we would talk about the purpose of Sport North is to inspire sport, and we ask each other, we should be asking each other daily in the office, what have we done to inspire sport? But, if we survey, folks in the NWC about what Sport North does, well, some might not know about Sport North. Those that have kids who are of games age, Arctic Winter Games, Canada Winter Games, Western Canada Summer Games, Canada Summer Games, then they know that Sport North orchestrates the games on behalf of the government, territorial government, to participate in those games. Some might know that we have also orchestrate kids' sport, that we also have a Hall of Fame, that we have awards, we have grants and things like that. But I think the brand visually, we have some stuff out there, but for us to have that crisp elevator speech that all the staff know and a lot of the general public know, we're not there yet.
Great. Thanks for sharing that, Spider. That's a good way to explain it. And I had visits sort of Sport UConn, which is your parallel federation, I guess, over in a different territory, and how they've evolved in their branding as well. So thank you. Anne and Peter, I know you guys are both from the same organization, so it might be more interesting, Peter, for you to hear Anne sort of share her perspective first, and then you can weigh in with questions or add to the conversation. So, Anne, as far as ARPA is concerned, do you feel that you have your own distinct brand that you portray in all of your promotional activities?
No, but I would say that we're developing that. We've just rebranded, I learned how long ago, it's been three years ago maybe, with a new logo, new colors, new look. And so I'm really thrilled with that. It looks awesome on the UConn Belt hoodie. It's just a really great and a good new look. But it's interesting because Peter and I were in the storage room 2 weeks ago getting ready for the gathering, and I had kept some posters from a campaign we did 15 years ago with the dog and a leash but they were all branded Active UConn because in the territory, we had a collaborative approach to getting UConn more active through recreation. And the whole idea in the Active UConn logo was that every organization would use it. Sport UConn would use it. All of their sport governing bodies would use it. Special O would use it. RPA would use it. And it would be that message that UConners are getting more active, or a motivational message to get people more active. So we started branding everything with the Active UConn logo and the RK logo. And I think it caused a lot of confusion because Active actually isn't a thing. It's just a logo. There's no organization behind it other than this concept of everybody sharing it. So, but that's the logo that Peter was saying people recognize as Active Yukon. So I find it something now as we try to, you know, build more resources for RK that have our new look and feel, that outlier is kind of there. Anyway, I can't remember what the question was, so I'll stop there.
I think that's a good lead in, though. Peter, do you want to add to that? Go ahead, Peter.
So, like, yeah, growing up in Whitehorse, which is, like, Anne was mentioning how, like, RK does a lot of community outreach. So people from Whitehorse might not necessarily know of RK as much, but people in the smaller communities would. But this, which not everyone can see, but this Active Yukon logo, I remember vividly. I remember seeing it everywhere. And then when we were in the storage locker, there was a poster. It's like a dog holding a leash. And it's like, says he's trying to tell you something. And I remember seeing that poster everywhere. But when I got this job, I had no idea what RK was. Not going to lie. Like, the logo, I mean, I know they just rebranded, but the RK logo, I wasn't really sure. And even on this Active Yukon thing, it does say RK.org, like, below. But I would have only recognized this sort of yellow and green logo. I don't know why that is, but it's just, that was something that I remember very well. But RK not so much. So hopefully we can steer RK into more brand recognition territory and up here. But
as, I don't know. As an outsider, I mean, I think there has to be a heck of a lot more work to go and, you know, promote what RPAY does or is meant to inspire than, you know, because there's an acronym, and if I'm not familiar with the Recreation Association acronyms, then geez, I'd be at a loss. But Active Yukon, I think, does a lot more for me than, you know, four-letter acronym that I haven't been indoctrinated with.
Yeah, and it's typically been a challenge, and it was even a challenge knowing who owns the Active Yukon sort of branding. So on this, if you have the slides open in front of you, slide 24 has some of the RK branding. And what I really like about their branding is it just looks like color and movement, and it looks fun. Like, I think that it's great. So that's some of their examples. And then the Active Yukon examples are shown on slide 25, just to give you an idea. But I think what happened, and this is more for Spider and Peter because Anne knows the background, is when we renewed the Yukon Active Living Strategy, there was a question as to who even owned the concept of Active Yukon. And, of course, the government claimed it. But they didn't claim it enough that their communications people allow us to use it. So they claimed that it was sort of their logo, Sport and Rec Ranch did, and that they, you know, it was that. But when I did some work, portraying 20 years of what had happened in the Yukon Active Living, with the Yukon Active Living Strategy, we weren't allowed to put that logo in association with the government Yukon logo. So it makes it a little complicated sometimes with the branding. So, I mean, I think, you know, having this type of conversation is really great for all of you guys, because you are working for territorial organizations, which is quite different than a community one, and thinking about how people perceive you across the territory and outside of the territory. So thanks for that part of the conversation.
I just had a quick question.
Let's take go ahead.
Was the Active Yukon logo being used by, like, multiple different departments, or was it just RP running it?
It was supposed to be all organizations that were related to sport and recreation and smart too, really. It was sort of governed under the Active Living Strategy is where the concept came from, and we have a lot of meetings as a collaborative group of organizations about the use of the logo. And, so everyone was supposed to brand it with the Active Yukon logo. But I would say, at the end of the day, really, it was only RK using it for the most part. Yeah. And Sport and Rec Ranch put it on their stuff as well. And, yeah, it's a bit more complicated than that, but that's generally the gist.
I was just curious as to, like, why I was able to recognize that brand so well. Like, I mean, it would make more sense to me if everyone was using it, then I'd be like, oh, of course, but I'd be recognizing it more. Everyone's using it, but it was so bizarre.
I think it's because we put it on everything, like all of our shirts, everything. It would have our page logo at the bottom with Sport and Rec and whoever else was funding what we were doing, but the main logo we were using was Active Yukon. So all of our t-shirts, all of our promotional materials, all of the posters, all of the everything has that Active Yukon brand attached to it.
Yeah, thanks. Good conversation. And Spiders just made a suggestion, you know, what about a colored background with UConn plays or play UConn or something? Like, but really, I think the Active UConn logo, I think what you're alluding to, Anne, is that we need to, or RP needs to move forward and create its own identity, like a UConn built or a Beam North or something like that, which I think you've done really well over the last 3 years doing that. People are starting to recognize RP way more. And leave the UConn government sport and rec brands to figure out their own branding. The initial intention behind Active UConn was something similar to Manitoba Moves or any of those sort of provincial kind of things. So yeah. Okay, so let's move on and now consider a little bit more how we use tools to promote recreation. So if you think even of what the word tool is, slide 26. Suggests that a tool helps us do something. So when we talk about promotional tools, we're thinking of something that helps us do our promotional activities. So, for example, a hammer is useful to put a nail into a board, and in promotion you choose a tool to convey a message or an image or to provide information, things like that. If you have slide 27 in front of you, you can see that there's many different tools we can use. And as I mentioned earlier, I've chosen to split these up into tried and tested and technology tools. And if you do activity number 4, I put a lot more information about some of the social media ones in there. Like I added TikTok since last year. There's Facebook, Instagram, all of those are also introduced in activity number 4 with some videos that will provide you with a bit more information as well. So really, go ahead and try and work through that before you do your last RLA for that. Work through activity 4, I mean. When you choose your tool, what you want to make sure is that you know who your intended audience or target group is, and also be clear on the messages that you want to share. Then decide on location. Where will you use your tool? And also on the timing, when will you use it? As some of you who are more familiar with Facebook than I am know, location and timing. So, you know, what time of day, which site you do, all of those sorts of things can make a difference in your promotional activities. So before we move on to maybe some good practices for social media, does anyone have any questions, comments on tools, location, or timing?
I do want to reiterate the timing one. I know, like, there's a specific time of day where you're going to get the most, like, if you're, like, thinking of the format of the newsfeed and how it's, like, usually chronological in some sense, like, if you post at a specific time, you're going to be, like, on 2 cycles of the newsfeed and you'll see more viewers than not. I don't remember exactly what time it is, but if you Google it, I'm sure they'll tell you what time to post. If that's what you're talking about, but it is actually really important. I have a few friends in Victoria who were like content creators and they're telling me all about it.
And I think, Peter, the same applies to if you're sending out an email with information or putting up a poster. So I don't know how many of you have seen posters like around Yellowknife or Whitehorse, and they're for something that's 3 months away. Like how many people really remember that? But if it's next weekend or the weekend after maybe, you might remember that. So I think that timing importance applies to technology, but also to some of those tried and tested tools as well. If you tell people too early that you've got a conference coming up, they're not going to remember. So it's good to think of your timing in that. Spider or Anne, any questions or comments about tools or timing or location?
I guess I have a question. Oh, go ahead, Spider.
I guess the location, I still got to wrap my head around that because location typically means a physical space to me. I don't know if I would call a slide location, but, you know, once I read the content on the slide, I'm in place, but, yeah.
You can also think of location, like if you've chosen social media, which social media. So, for example, probably in NWT, same as in UConn, Twitter gets government folks way more than Facebook does. So your location might also be, like your choice of tool could also imply location. RPA runs about three different Facebook pages, one which is the Northern Rec Network. So I often think of which Facebook page might be most appropriate. So that could be another way of thinking about it. Anne, you had a question?
I guess it's more about choosing the tool and trying to figure out if it made a difference. We just invested for our most recent early deadline for the Real Leader program, so we asked on radio about 2 weeks at a time before the deadline to try to capture people so they will remember that the deadline's coming up in the next, you know, 10 days. That, and we had an increase in Real Leader applications, but I have no idea if it's because of the radio. Like, it could have been a fluke. It could have been social media. It could have been something else. And it's expensive, right? So I wonder, like, how do you measure that other than asking people?
You can't control. Can't control the variables.
Yeah.
So we could ask on their evaluation, like their report that they have to write, or in their application, you could ask, how did you hear about the Real Leader program?
Yeah, which I think Roger's going to do. But, yeah, anyway, I just find it interesting. It's a bit of a gamble.
For sure. So, okay, so, yeah, as you can see, then the tool that you choose as well as the location and the timing can make a difference in your success or not of your promotional activities. So I think the other thing that's really important for all of us on today's call, because you're all working with multiple communities, you're not just working in your own community, and yes, you're based in the larger community in your territory, but you're also working with really small communities. So let's take a little bit of time to think about what good practices for social media across our territory when we have small and remote communities are. You know, sometimes what works in Whitehorse doesn't always work in a small community. Sometimes you have to be careful what you put, especially if there's photos or images included. So as I mentioned, I created, with the conversation that we had last year, I created a tip sheet. And so I'm going to write down some of your suggestions and add them to that tip sheet and then share it back with you. So let's start with Anne this time, and we'll go Anne, Peter, and Spider, just I'm changing up our circle. And the question is, in about 30 seconds or less, so you don't have to take a lot of time, plus we just have about 15 minutes left, please share a couple of things, or one thing even, that you think might be a good practice for social media in the communities that you work with. So just briefly, Anne, what are one or two things that you would classify as good practices for social media across the Yukon? And I think you just muted yourself, Anne. You were unmuted.
So I'm not exactly sure what you're asking, but I think using Twitter to reach government and specific pages to reach those specific audiences would make some sense to me.
Okay, so you were just breaking up in the second one. So on the second one, you were just saying using more specific pages or groups to reach certain target audiences?
Exactly, like being more strategic around where we post and who we post it to. Like if we're trying to reach individuals, then it would be our generic page. If we are trying to reach recreation leaders, then I think it's the Northern Rec Network. And if we are trying to reach swimming pool managers, we'd use our aquatic Facebook page. But we wouldn't post the same thing in all three places, I don't think, unless it was relevant.
Exactly. So really having, maybe your suggestion then is that you have more than one social media feed if you have multiple target audiences.
Yes. And then Twitter for reaching government, which is a different type of media, I guess.
Awesome. Thanks, Dan. Peter, you know, what would you say? Like, what are one or two things that you consider good practices for social media?
Well, I think good practices would be, like, I think grammar is important, like having professional content that is, like, properly structured. Being, like, respectful. Like, I know some people, like, will go for, like, the cheeky approach. We were actually talking about this in the social media breakout group during the rec gathering. It was, I think it was City of Whitehorse or someone, like, they would comment on people's posts and stuff, and they kind of are a little cheeky about their comment, and it was weird, because there's two perspectives. Like, one person is like, oh, it's kind of funny, so it's like, oh, I'll engage with this organization that's, like, kind of humanizing themselves. But then at the same time, some people think it's kind of annoying. They think it's kind of offensive. And so it's like kind of trying to think about what is respectful and what, like, you should be hosting. John thought it was genius. He thought it was hilarious. So, and then I think someone thought it was annoying. Someone else said, I think it was Ian. I can't remember. But another good practice would just be, like, I think privacy is a big one. Although it's kind of like trending differently now. Like, before, you'd always, like, especially if you're, like, let's say you're doing one for youth and stuff, you always need to, like, have consent forms and waivers. You want to, like, use promotional content, and it's just a good practice to be safe with that stuff, respect people's privacy.
Thanks, Peter. There were some good things. I love that you say grammar is important, because I think older people are more likely to use Facebook as well, and man, it annoys me when people don't use the right grammar. It just makes them look like they're dumb. So, thank you. That's my personal bias. Spider, how about yourself? What do you feel are some good practices for social media in your community and across your territory?
I think it's still useful for, you know, so it's not just verbiage to have a call to action. To have, you know, if you can, an emotional trigger. And then I guess in the background, a way that we can, possible more easily, you know, evaluate its effectiveness of that platform.
Great. So I think when you mean emotion, when you say emotional trigger, are you meaning something that motivates people, that sort of grabs at your heart, rather than the something that's just like speaking to your head?
You bet.
Okay. Yeah, because I think there's two different ways when you say that. When we use the word trigger, sometimes I think of, like, I also think of things that could trigger people negatively. Like, so Peter said that, you know, the comment about the Canada Game Center. Some people think it's funny. Some people find it annoying. There could also be triggers that way culturally. So, you know, when I first moved to the Yukon, we had, you know, our Eurocentric type population and our Indigenous populations. But now we got populations and cultures from all over the world. And I know that Yellowknife is very diverse as well. And I think that we also, when you say the word trigger and what you also said, Peter, I think of things that can be a negative trigger as far as differences across cultures. So, you know, I've seen, when we first started our Rec North training program, the person I worked with wanted to have these little comic-type icons as images, and they really didn't sit well with me. I saw them as a very sort of Western European sort of image, and I couldn't see how they would speak to, like, Indigenous populations, especially in Nunavut. You know, even things like eye contact are different among different cultures. So for me, I think that a good practice is keeping it clean, like what Peter's, I think you were alluding to that more so, Peter, like trying to keep it clean and respectful and recognize that on social media you get many, many different people with perspectives and opinions and values. And so, you know, yeah, Facebook can be a trigger for a lot of really bad comments, and that's probably why CDC blocked all the comments during the pandemic. But, you know, I guess it depends on what you want your image to be as an organization, too.
I use the expression...
I feel like the word trigger... Yeah, go ahead.
I use the expression taking the high road, and if we can't... and if there isn't a high road, then we create a high road.
Yeah, so being the better person,
I think.
Yes.
Over to you, Peter.
I was going to say the word trigger. I feel like recently in the past decade or so, it's developed a sort of negative connotation, because people get like getting triggered over something. But I feel like historically it was like a neutral word. Is that right? Or is it always sort of like a negative thing? Like when you say emotional trigger, I'm like, now I think of it as negative. But I feel like before it wasn't always that case. Like I feel like it was kind of just like, anyway, it doesn't really matter. Trigger just means to like a switch to me. Like I think the word itself, but now in the way that words evolve to mean different things, now it kind of means negative.
That's a really good way of putting it. Thanks. I think that you're totally right. Like 20 years ago, I would have used the word trigger, like trigger you to think differently or trigger you to act differently. But I think with some of the changes in society, that's a harder word to use. So. That's great. Thanks, Peter. You're frozen. I don't know if it's my end or your end, but it's probably mine. Okay, so those are some really useful sort of ideas, and what I'll do is I'll take those and I'll combine them with the social media good practices tip sheet that we did last year, and then I'll share it back with you in the forum as well. We've got about 5 minutes to wrap up our call, and I wanted to point out that in the Explore More section of the learning event, which if you scroll down past week one and past week two, you can find it in there. I've got some information about things like photos, privacy, and Canada's anti-spam legislation. So some of that can be a little confusing for Anne and I trying to figure it out and how it worked and how it applied to nonprofits and how it applied to people who are your members versus not your members. So I have put some kind of big picture things in there that you can take a look at. But I'm just wondering if you can just quickly share with us for our last round to wrap up today's call some of the things that you might do to ensure privacy in your promotional activities. So, Peter, I'm going to put you on the spot. And if you don't know what RPAY does, that's totally okay. If you have a suggestion of what could be done, then you could suggest that too.
Well, for social media specifically, sorry?
So any promotional, like even if you're doing a poster or anything like that, how do you ensure privacy in your promotional activities?
Basically, like, I think, yeah, a really good thing to do, I don't know if RPAY does it, when you have, like, people who are registering, you just basically ask them, like, the question, are you comfortable with, like, we're going to take photographs of this. Like, it'll be, like, in the registration form, and we're taking photographs that for promotional content. Do you consent to you getting your photo taken? And honestly, mostly everyone is fine with that. If there is someone who isn't, then you just are really be wary of that. Usually it's just one or two people who might not be interested, and so then you just be wary to, like, cut them out of shots and use, like, pictures where they're not in them. And I think that's just a really easy, foolproof way of just kind of getting content, because obviously you do want to have, like, the participants in there, and quite often, like, I've been in a couple posters, and I kind of like it, like, I look at it, and I'll be like, oh, look, like, I'm on this poster, like, from, like, whatever, a camp I did when I was 12, but, like, it's kind of funny, but still really hate it, so just getting that a permission first is important.
Thanks, Peter. Spider, how about for yourself and in your work? How do you ensure privacy and promotional activities?
I think, you know, we still need to do a good job at, or better job at seeking permission, especially if we want to, you know, to recontact them, if they're open to being recontacted. We have an event coming up next week at the NWT Teachers Federation Annual Conference. Every 2 years, they invite all the educators across the territory to Yellowknife. They close down schools, and we've got a trade show booth targeting junior kindergarten and kindergarten teachers on early years play. And we'd like to have a contact list of all those kindergarten, junior kindergarten teachers. So we have two big hockey bags full of physical literacy play equipment that we'd like to give away as a draw. And we also then want to be able to follow up and see if they want to be part of our community of practice conversations on how better to generate physical literacy amongst those two school groups. But I think I need to be purposeful instead of saying, okay, you know, enter the draw, we'll need your email, but also to say, you know, we also as well then like to share, you know, our upcoming webinars and professional development opportunities with you, and, you know, check here if you're open to that. But
Before you do that, Spider, go and read the Canada Anti-Spam legislation, because it explains exactly what you need to do to collect email addresses in that way and share things back. So I think you'll find that resource really helpful for that purpose.
Okay.
Thanks, Spider. And any last thoughts from you on how you ensure privacy in promotional activities?
No, but I really like what Spider just said, because I was working on getting some business cards made that we can use for draw, so that we can get information and ask people, do you send to us sending you our newsletter and invite you to participate in Rec North Learning events or whatever it might be? So that's super helpful for me, because now I can change, get the proper wording on those draw cards, because I think that would be a nice way of getting permission. And I like what Peter said too about the permission to use people's and widows and hosts, and because those have a lot of value. And I guess the other thing I think of when you said that was around asking, what kind of information do we actually need to know? Like, I probably need a name, and I probably need a contact information, but do I really need to know if you're male or female or non-binary or how would you, like, just kind of looking at what it is that I'm trying to find out and why I need to know, if I need to know, because if I don't need to know, I shouldn't be asking it.
Exactly.
Just,
so, good question. Go ahead.
Sorry, I just was going to say that's a really good one, because I just, I signed up for, like, the Volleyball Canada. Like, there's, like, a drop-in of volleyball on Tuesdays, and you have to sign up with Volleyball Canada. And, like, they were asking me, like, what's your ethnicity? Like, are you white? Like, are you, like, they're asking my age, my, like, birth date, my address, like, all this stuff. And I was just like, why do you need to know all this stuff? Like, I don't even want to tell you half these things just to go play drop-in volleyball. Like,
yeah.
Take my $50 and, like, leave me alone.
And they're probably asking
that's
you those questions, because sport funding, like, especially the sport bilateral funding, my recollection from working with Sport UConn is the sport bilateral funding, the reporting is all of that demographic stuff, which is crazy. Like, people shouldn't have to share that much information if they don't want to. So, yeah, well, thanks. Really good example, Peter. And you know, some of those things don't even have the option of just saying, I don't want to share this with you. So I think it's also important to give people that option.
I, yeah, it was actually really annoying. I don't know why.
Yeah, that would be for sure. Okay, well, I'm just looking at the time, and I know that you guys all are in busy places and have busy days, and so I want to respect your time. My apologies for going a few minutes over it. Sometimes with a smaller group, we have a richer conversation, so thank you very much. This wraps up our PM 101 Promote Recreation Learning event. So there is a required learning activity due on Sunday, and